What's up, everyone? Taylor May here with Security VIP. I want to thank you for tuning in to another episode of our podcast series, Your Home for Nothing But the Truth. And hey, if you're passionate about sharing the unfiltered truth and want to be featured in a community that's all about it, Security VIP is your home. Our community boasts over 2,500 end users in the security industry, spanning from sectors such as retail, gaming, entertainment, education, professional sports, healthcare, government, and even more. So whether you're eager to boost your company's visibility, showcase cutting-edge technology, or you want to address key industry changes, Security VIP is the platform for you. So if you're ready to dive in, shoot us an email at info@securityvip.net, or you can connect with us on LinkedIn at SVIP. Remember, Security VIP is your home for nothing but the truth, and we look forward to featuring you in the next episode. Stay safe.
You think you know me.
Today on Security VIP, we feature the Director of Building and Security Operations of Baldwin & Shield Construction Company, Ron Self. Get ready for nothing but the truth.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the episode of the Security VIP Podcast. It's your home for nothing but the truth. As always, I'm your host, Taylor May. And on today's episode, we are going to Arkansas to feature the man himself, Mr. Ron Self. He is the Director of Building and Security Operations for Baldwin and Shell Construction Company. That's a GC, folks. And actually, this is probably the first time I've actually featured a GC, a general contractor, on the podcast. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about security ops. We're going to talk about what Ron is doing, because he is actually very engaged and active on LinkedIn. I've seen a lot of his posts and videos, and people highlight him a lot. But Ron, my friend, welcome to SVIP. How are you?
I'm great, Taylor. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you on the podcast, man. I know this has kind of been a long time coming. You're in Arkansas. We were talking about that before we kicked this off. I spent a lot of time in Fayetteville for my days when I was at Stillwater. I've got a good friend over there, and got to hang out in Fayetteville. Got to party a little bit in Fayetteville, a little different environment out there in Arkansas. But man, how do you like Arkansas so far?
Oh, I love it. You know, it's a vast array of geography, and you know, you can be in flatlands 1 minute and up in the hills up in the northwest Arkansas a different minute. So it's almost like three states in one. So
people say that about Texas, man, because it's like hot one day and cold the other day, you know. So you're right though, man. My wife loves the area, especially during the fall, because like all the leaves are changing, so it's very beautiful in that state.
Mountains are a big attraction up in that northwest Arkansas area. Growing area, very big growing area.
100%, man. So Ron, you've been in the industry for quite some time. I see a heavy amount of experience in K-12 education, which I love. So you're probably an expert in school safety and security. So I definitely want to hit on that and definitely pivot to what you're doing now at Baldwin. But for my listeners, can you just give us some context about your background, your experience, and kind of what you bring to the industry?
Oh, sure, man. I started in this area back in 1999, which was in law enforcement back then. So I became a police officer and eventually became a school resource officer, and then transitioned over to director of security role, which was about, I guess, 19 years ago. Transitioned over to a director of security school role for a smaller district back then. District was about, I don't know, 2,500 students. And then I moved up to Little Rock about 10 years ago and took over as the director of security for Little Rock Schools, which was about 23,000 students, which is big in Arkansas, maybe not so big in Texas, but maybe a mid-sized district in Texas, but it's a large district in Arkansas. During that time, you know, doing all that and running the security, I wanted to better understand the educational environment. And so I went back and actually got my specialist in educational leadership. And then my claim to fame for your state is I became a certified superintendent inside the state of Texas, and then a certified superintendent inside the state of Arkansas. So it's kind of an odd route there, because I've never spent a day teaching. However, I had a superintendent's license in two different states. So it can be done, you know, and it was more for me, for my benefit, to understand how to better school security while keeping the educational mindset, right? Because I can come in as a law enforcement officer and a security professional and go in and say, hey, teacher, you need to do this. But if I understand more what that teacher and that administrator is trying to accomplish, then I can better tailor make, what the security and the safety aspect, and to get them more focused, which eventually changes that culture, which you hear me say a lot about changing the culture piece. So I did that, and then after doing that, an opportunity came along to leave that world after so many years and go to work for GC. And everybody's like, "Well, what in the world? You went from a security job in a school to a general contractor, right?" But the reality of it is the general contractor I work for is a heavy builder of schools. They do a lot of K-12 school work, right? And so what we run into is not every district can afford to hire a full-time security director, and they've got the coach or the athletic person or the vice principal or the person that didn't run fast enough is handling security, right? Because that's the world we live in. And so what we do is, in this role, I help them, whether it's a new build or whether it's a remodel or anything like that, we help them make the right decisions with security. So one of the things you'll hear a lot in this world is people don't know what they don't know. And so some people, they may think they know what is going on with security, and they really don't have a clue. And sometimes they're spending money on things that they're just wasting money on,
That they
right?
shouldn't
And
be spending
they
money
haven't
on.
got that big, and that's one of the probably one of the things I harp on LinkedIn a lot is there's an avenue for AI. There's an avenue for tech. I mean, I'm different generation, but I'm probably more advanced in tech than most in my generation, right? I'm all about tech. I think it has a place, but if you don't have that basic building block laid out, then you're wasting your time with the tech piece. And a lot of people want that set it and forget it, and security is just simply not that.
No, I mean, you're 100% right, and that's why I like your background a lot, because what you just mentioned, your experience with K through 12, I love being a continuous learner myself, so I love to see that. But what you're bringing out the Baldwin and the GC life
Right.
is you're right. You're managing that responsibility for that school or that environment where, hey, they don't know what they don't know when it comes to proactive security, whether it's technology, whether it's product, whether it's process, right? Because I think a lot of times people just walk into a school and they automatically think it's safe, but you look at something that happened a couple of weeks ago, man, or actually last week, Ron. I don't know if you saw the news, man. A stabbing took place here in Frisco in the Dallas-Fort Worth area at a high school track meet, by a student that brought a knife in a bag and happened at a track meet. But it's like, why wouldn't the school check bags at a public event like that? Number one, but number two, it's like you could have had maybe technology in place. Everyone talks about weapon detection. We can talk about that, but something to just kind of screen bags coming into a public event where that doesn't have to happen, or it didn't even have to happen. So what are your thoughts there, man? Because like this is sometimes controversial, and I love talking about this on the podcast because it's nothing but the truth. But from an expert in your lane at school safety and security, you've seen a lot. We talk about culture with kids now. It's a whole different environment going to school now as a kid than when I went to school, 20 years ago. But it's like, what would you do in a situation like that where culture has changed, weapons and bullying and everything is through the roof? What's step number one for like you go into a new school and say, hey, this is what you absolutely must have if you're going to implement school safety and security?
Well, a lot to unpack there, but
Yeah.
let me start with that track meet real quick. And what we run into a lot is the reality of it is people let the parents run the school district. If a parent doesn't want to go through a metal detector, they think that's too invasive. They think that's
Right.
too inconvenient. You're causing me, you're slowing me down from getting into your gate, right? And who gives a crap? You know what I mean? And so the school's got to get to a point to where they got to say, you know what? We're going to keep these kids safe. I don't care how bad it inconveniences you. This is what we're going to do. Right. And so then you'll start to do those bag checks. Then you'll start to do those metal detectors. And here's the deal. Once people get used to that, it's super simple. I mean, we ran weapons detection systems, walk-through weapons detection systems on every secondary campus. And we did it, every time kids come to school, every morning, every time you went outside and came back in. Right. And you see all these crazy articles about how these weapons detections and lines wrapped around schools. Well, that was because there's a people problem there. There was an implementation problem there. They didn't implement the product right. Stop blaming the product for your failures. And that's what we get into in the security world is they want to say, well, it's a product problem. Well, 99% of the time, it's not a product problem. It's a people problem, is what the deal is, you know. So there is ways to do that, and it will cause a little bit of inconvenience, but we have to understand that a little bit of an inconvenience is much better than a kid getting stabbed or much worse, shot or anything like
Well,
that. So
they use these the systems at NFL games, professional venues. You think
that's
there's
right.
lines out the ass at an NFL game? Like, I've seen videos. It's pretty seamless, man. They're in and out
Yep.
pretty quickly. That's, to your
Well,
point, a pit
it's about getting
process.
used to it, man. It's so here's what I told the folks. It we ran I was running weapons detection systems in a 2,600 student high school. The students weren't my problem. They figured it out in a day or so. It was the adults that were trying to were still wrap their head around it, right? Kids are resilient. I always used to tell folks, and this, you know, if kids were the only thing I had to deal with in schools, my job would have been gravy. You know, the adults are what causes a
Amen.
lot of the problem, you know. But you know, one of the things that we see is people in buildings, to your other point, is not taking ownership, right? So if you can walk into a building and let's just say you find an open door and you walk through that building, how far can you walk before somebody says, and it doesn't have to be, hey, what are you doing in my building? It's simple as, how can I help you? Can I show you the office? Do you have a meeting? Is there somebody I can meet with? So it's about security with hospitality, right? And it's about teaching those teachers and that custodial and the maintenance worker and the administrators and whoever, that it's everyone's job to handle that security piece, right? And it's just, and sometimes you find somebody walking through the building and they're up to no good. And the first time they're confronted with someone being very nice, it could completely change the outcome of what was about to occur. Right. So just as simple as that, simple as I saw something the other day where somebody didn't know the protocol, right? So they didn't understand their policy. They didn't understand their procedures. They didn't understand what was going on if a crisis would occur, right? Just knowing that documentation and knowing what's going on in the school and then having then listening to people, right? So we as adults are terrible about listening to kids, right? We want to talk to kids, but we don't want to listen to kids.
Because we think
Because
we know better,
sometimes,
right? Yeah.
well, and oftentimes what we need to do is shut up and listen, right? I mean, and let the kids talk. And you'd be surprised what you learn from those kids when you do have those conversations. And, you know, and if you've got a teacher in the English 101 class and little Johnny comes to school every day, and little Johnny's usually in a cheerful mood, and little Johnny starts coming to school and he's not in a cheerful mood anymore, then that teacher should be paying attention enough to know, hey, there's an issue there, right? Those kids are crying out for help and we're not listening. And that is, once again, that's an adult problem. I told you before, if kids were all I had to worry about, it would have been gravy. It was the adults that were the problem. So we're just not doing what we need to do. You know, we want to blame it on guns, and I'll be the first to tell you that since COVID did things that we will never understand for years to what these kids are, their ability to handle conflict and conflict resolution skills went out the door, and parents are not teaching that at home, and they're not learning at school, and social media is amplifying the problems, right? Well, social media is not going to go away. So we've got to figure out how to do conflict resolution skills. And it starts with the parents, you know. You know, one of the things that I tried to get done that we were never able to do, but we were kept trying to figure out how to do it. And then, you know, I wound up taking a different position. But one of the things that was always a great idea to me is we were had an issue with banning parents, right? Because parents would come to the campus and they didn't have conflict resolution skills either. So they were acting out, and then we wind up banning the parent from the campus. Well, that's never a good thing, right? When you take a parent out of a kid's educational life, that's not a good thing, right? That's not good for the kid. That's not good for the community. So create ways for those parents to get back into that campus and have that ban lifted, whether it's taking a conflict resolution class, whether it could be an online deal, it could be something the school offers after hours, it could be some way for that parent to take to learn how to act, but also get back into education life. And that's something we need to do with our kids as well, right? So start letting them find ways to, if they get in trouble or do whatever, then they have to attend a conflict resolution class. And we've got to be we've got to start teaching them how to better handle conflict. And until we get to that point, I just think there's going to be we're spinning our wheels.
Well, that was going to be my question, Ron. I was like, what is the potential solution or recommendation to put in place, especially for those school districts that don't have capital, that don't have funding, So maybe a resource like a class like that would help educate the parents, number one, but number two, make sure that they have involvement, engagement with their students, and then know what the hell is going on. Because I mean, I spoke with a seven-figure business owner a couple weeks ago, Miss Celia Cortez, and she said the same exact thing that you're saying right now. Parenting is the issue, whether it's absentee parents, whether it's just parents that don't care, whether it's parents that don't even have conflict resolution themselves. And one of the things she mentioned, Ron, which, for me and probably the world we live in today, obviously I thrive on social media. That's kind of how I run my company. But like, she doesn't allow her kids to have any social media, no TikTok, no Facebook, no Instagram. So I think that's a positive right now, being, I think they're in their 13 years. But when they get older, obviously, as an adult, they'll probably want to be on social media in some capacity. But you're right, kids are scrolling or doom scrolling. They're seeing things online that the brain cognitivity is going out the door half the time. So I guess would you agree with that mentality with parents nowadays? Like, is social media really being a threat towards how school like how kids act now in schools? Because again, I'll point to another example, Chief of Police Mark Stout of Putnam City Schools in Oklahoma City said the same thing. He said, "Taylor, we have seen an increase in violence incidents due to social media influence at our school district in Oklahoma City." So I'm like, there's got to be a parallel there where social media is driving so much hate and crime and threats. So I mean, what are your thoughts there, Ron, on that impact?
Man, I see the benefits of social media every day when it's used correctly, right? And I see it, but for every benefit you see out there, there's so much negative for it, right? And most of it is our kids just don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to, it goes back to that conflict resolution skills, man. They can't, they're used to doing what me and you are doing, right? Talking across the internet, right? They're not used to handling face-to-face conflict. And when they get face to face, they don't know how to, like me and you were to get together and we've got a conflict, then we know how to work it out, right? Because we know how to talk to people. We know how to actually interact with the human being. And these kids don't. It was, they spent so many years online and so many years, and most of their college time. And that's the problem with now is we got kids graduating college that have never been stepped foot in a class, right? Because it was all online and they went from COVID through COVID with high school and then went straight into college. So, you've got this, for every, like I said, for every great thing it does, there's so much negativity with it. And our kids are, and there's some states trying to put, and I think Arkansas, and I think I remember seeing something the other day where a judge overruled it, where Arkansas had put in a law where you had to be a certain age before you could get social media, right? Which is a great deal. Now, the problem is if you're any techie, there are 15 different ways around that, right? So, we can put in VPNs and various other things to make it look like you're sitting in a different state. And even with the parents, and you have to be tech savvy yourself if you're trying to make your kids stay off social media because app inside a phone, where most people can't find it if you don't know what you're doing, right? You can make it look like a calculator, you can make it look like a calendar. There's so many things out there that you can duke the system with. So parents have to be pretty tech savvy too when they're dealing with those kids stuff. So I do agree with the whole age thing, right? Because you've got kids now that are 6, 7, 8 years old that are out there on TikTok, and it's just not what it needs to be. And the bad thing about it is if anybody spent any time on TikTok or any time on Twitter, they have a bad side as well, right? And
100%.
it's super easy to get looped up into that. And if you don't know what you're doing, right? And so it's not the best thing in the world, right? But we just went through huge storms and flooding and tornado issues, and a lot of people were getting their information from social media because now all our weather people are on social media. You've got podcasts going out like The Truth Here, where people are learning what they don't know, right? You've got, social media has done a wonder for that piece, right? It's where a lot of people get their news, their information from right now. So, you've got both sides. So I think the being able to the parents have to be able to regulate this better. I mean, it's if you took social media out of a high school, you'd probably reduce the problems by about 80% right now. I mean, it's a big problem inside of the school, you know. And I mean, and here's the deal, they're selling dope, social media. I mean, it's not it's not walk door to door now. It's, you know, you're selling drugs online. It's not, it's a different world.
It's you're 100% right, man. I grew up on like AIM, Instant Messenger, Xanga,
Right.
which is like a blog, and then obviously MySpace, and then Facebook, etc. It's just I can't imagine now being in middle school or junior high and having the accessibility to a TikTok or a platform that has mass reach and mass information. Because you're right, there are a lot of kids that are weaponizing social media. But
Absolutely.
then on the flip side, there's a lot of positive coming out of social media because sometimes you get news faster
That's right.
versus
Yep.
and other things, you can learn things faster too. Like if you follow good people, you can actually learn a lot more from someone else on social media. So I think there's pros and cons there. So you're right, man. I guess my other question around school safety, man, and I would love your comments on this because I talk with a lot of casinos. I'm connected with a lot of casinos, but you know, casinos have I think one of the most difficult environments to protect because it's 24/7 open floor concepts. There's a lot of people, mass foot traffic, but one of the concepts they have and challenges they have is it's open. And so I came from a high school, Plano Senior High here in Dallas, where we had an open campus. Now it was juniors and seniors, but the campus was like four different buildings. It's almost like a little mini school college. So my question to you as a leader in school safety is like, how do you protect like an open campus, man? Because you're right. If there's a check-in areas, but like if you're so open, how do you even identify someone new that's on property? Because whether it's a student or a parent or someone that shouldn't even be there, like is it cameras? Is it policy? Is it greetings? I mean, we put SROs out there 24/7. Like, how do we identify, you know, threats on an open campus?
Yes. So all of that, right? So,
All the above.
here's the deal. Open campuses were a terrible concept, a horrible concept, right? So back in the early 2000s, I worked at a junior high school as an SRO, and the junior high school had the admin building, the one building, then the math building was another building, the English building was
That's
another
how
building.
Plano is. Yeah.
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 And so the superintendent at that time, he walked up to me. He said, "You know, Self," he said, "it's a beautiful campus, isn't it?" And I said, "Yep." He said, "You know, designers that came up with this, they built this, and about a year later, they stood back and said, 'What in the hell did we just do?' Because
Creating
it was
problems.
terrible for a
Yeah.
junior high, right? You know, what are you doing with a junior high and making it so open campus?" And that was early 2000s when we were just barely getting into this. You know, we'd been dealing with some school shooters up until that point and some active aggressors, but it wasn't as common as it is now, right? It wasn't, the problems weren't near what it was now. And I couldn't imagine going back to that junior high now and working there. But it's number one, it's trying to get away from that, right? So there are ways where you can construct things to connect all that, right? This source, you run into a funding issue, and then the parents start saying, "Well, what are you doing to my beautiful campus? And what are you doing here?" So there are ways to doing that while keeping aesthetics in mind, right? Because we don't make anything ugly, especially in Texas. If you ever been to any high school campuses in Texas, it's like walking onto a college campus, right?
It is wild,
So
man.
I always get joke that Texarkana, Arkansas High School and Texarkana, Texas High School, if you go look at the both, it's like totally different, right? Texas High School is like so much more elaborate. But anyway, so you've got to do that. And so fencing, and there are ways to put fencing up as well that makes it look good. It doesn't have to be your chain link fence, which that's where everybody's mind goes, right? When you start talking about fencing at a school. But it is about getting that staff involved and having a security staff. And SROs are great, but you can also utilize, you know, in-house security staff as well, and use the two together to work those areas, and then cameras, of course. But I think it really goes back to everybody owning that campus. It's
Yeah.
gotta, man, you gotta have, you know, the Plano English teacher's gotta be the security officer. The Plano math teacher's gotta be a security officer. You know, everybody has to be that security officer. So then you go from, I don't know, say you got 10 security officers there, whatever, that's probably a pretty big campus, but say you got 10 security officers and you've got 300 teachers. Well, now you've got 310 security officers, right? And that's the way you have to look at it. Everybody has to take that Because we are fighting concepts that, let's be real. We're still going to school in campuses that had smoking areas for students back in the 80s. And they're still designed where students can go out there. They were designed back then to be wide open for the community to come in, and now we're trying to make it to where the community can't come in, right? And keep them out. So it's difficult. But I think it's doable. And one of that pieces is just changing that culture. And not only the parents, but the students. I'm sorry, not only the staff, but the students as well. You've got to get them involved. They've got to be able to tell people and be able to tell teachers. And that's where you bring them in, and you go back to listening to what those students are, right? So you bring that student group in that's so when you create a security committee or whatever for that school, and you have students on it, right? If you've got a security committee for the campus or for the district, have students on it, because those students will tell you where your problems are, right? Because you may, as an adult, because you don't see the problems that they see, right? So they'll tell you where things are that you wouldn't even have a clue about, right? Because they know the ins and outs of that building, right? So it's about involving everybody and just making it a whole pie instead of just a piece. That makes sense.
I agree. I think it's a shared responsibility from A to Z at the campus, and I think Chief Stout of Putnam City Schools, he said the same thing. We have student involvement with our SROs. We've got a student committee that sits on safety and security decisions because we get the inside scoop that our SROs don't get half the time, or if you have a really good relationship with SROs and students, then they'll get that information. But you're exactly right, man. And the one thing I think, in the 80s, that was why they made smoking areas, is because they didn't have social media back then.
That's
There was
right.
no social media back in the 80s, but
That
you're
was the
100%.
social media, man. You went to the smoking area.
Yeah, that was the hangout spot, right?
Yeah.
You're right, man. And not to knock my old high school, man, but it was probably a couple of years ago, Ron. I went to go see the campus, see a couple old coaches of mine in high school, and I literally parked my truck, walked on campus, no one greeted me, and then I went to the building where there's the gymnasium, and right next to it is like the drama class and everything else, but literally the door was unlocked, like just wide unlocked. I'm like, come on, Plano, like you got to do a little bit better than this. And Plano's a big school district, man. It's a 6A school district here in Dallas-Fort Worth. I played in front of 15,000 fans every Friday night. It's a big campus. But you're right, when you've got a school that large, and I graduated with 3,500 kids, it's like you have to have teachers and students and SROs and principals and et cetera be involved, especially today. I talk about casinos a lot being the number one challenge. But it's so close to that right now is schools, because even though schools are not 24/7, the amount of resources available in a school environment right now versus what's available in casinos, not even close. But there's a lot more challenges now, and I think it's even a bigger challenge because it's younger generation of kids growing up with access to things that they shouldn't have access to, which is amplified on social media, so it's
Yeah.
like it's just crazy.
You know, in casinos is you talk about casinos, which they're it's crazy. I mean, I get it, but they do have the funding at least.
Right.
And we've got it's 2025, Taylor. And I'm still going to schools that don't have functioning locks. And we've got companies out here trying to sell drones and all this other crazy technology, and we've got schools that still don't have the basics done,
Yeah.
right? A locked door, just like you just walked into that school with an unlocked door. You can do that at almost every campus there is out there, right? Because somebody, I walked to a campus the other day, and we were doing a walk through to look at a project over there, and we walked to the door, and the guy went to open the door, and there was a prop in it. There's a rock sticking in it, right? So, first thing
Plano
I
had
did,
that
dumped the
too.
rock
Yeah.
across the parking lot.
Yeah.
But So, and it's oh, my guys, I used to always tell them, said, hey, if you go out and you find a prop, that prop comes to my office. Hey, you should have saw my office. It's full of props, because if the shop teacher made these wood props or this fancy little brick that they stick in the door. And we've seen time and time again when a locked door would have stopped an active aggressor, right? Or at least slowed it down long enough for us to get help to them. Right. And we that's the basic, besides culture and people taking ownership in their school, the next basic thing is functioning locks and utilizing those locks. Right. And those are some of the basic things that we can't we still can't get right. So we've got schools now that are, and don't get me wrong, some of it's a funding issue, some of it is a funding priority issue, right? Because they've got the funding, they're just not prioritizing that problem. And we see that a lot where schools are not, they say, well, we don't have the funding. Well, but their central office staff is overstaffed and they're making way more money than the neighboring school district, right? Well, you got the money, your money's just not prioritized, right? So you got to prioritize that funding. And then utilize that funding correctly. And so we're running into schools today that are there has to have residential door handles on their classroom doors. The maintenance guy is still walking around with a key ring as big as my head with as many keys around it, right? If you don't have a system where you've got one key to open every door,
Right.
you're 30 years behind. Easy. Because early 2000s, the first district I worked for, we had a full grandmaster system. You're talking about early 2000. Jonesboro, back in the early 2000s when I worked there, they had a grandmaster system. So it's not a new concept. They're just not prioritizing their needs. And it goes back to this, we talk about what schools need. And one of the things I always say is everybody's trying to jump to Z when they don't even have A, B, and C done, right? So they don't have locks. They don't have a culture. They don't know what a crisis plan is. If they do have a crisis plan, it's sitting on a shelf and it's gathering dust and it hadn't been updated in 5 years, right? And they're trying to install weapons detection system, which I had, right? And it's great. Weapons detection systems work. Flock cameras. We had flock cameras on our campus. I think you work for Flock, right? We had flock cameras on our campus, but we got the basics completed first. Then we started getting the fancy things like the wearable panic buttons. I had a wearable panic system when I was there at Little Rock. Was that the first thing I ever implemented? No. And I'll tell anyone that calls me about that system, it's great if you're ready for it, right? But not everybody's ready for it. If you don't have working locks, you're not ready for it. But that's the pretty shiny, flashy things that everybody wants to talk about, right? Locks are not pretty. Locks don't make headlines, right?
But they're
Weapons
functional.
detection systems make headlines. Lock cameras make headlines,
Right.
right? So it's about getting those basics done first, and then you can get into the tech stuff. But everything has its place.
Well, speaking about priorities, Ron, I had a podcast, a good friend of mine, Chief Rick Francis. You might know him.
Yeah, I do.
He's in Orlando in Seminole County over there. He's the chief of school safety and security over there. Great guy. I had him on a podcast a couple years ago. Him and I catch up every now and then, but I for whatever reason I listened to the podcast again. He said, Taylor, why does it take blood on the ground for us to start funding this stuff? Because that's when it's prioritized, is when there's a mass shooting or there's a kid that died. Then it's like, oh, light bulb, we should probably put more funding towards safety and security. But it's like, why does it take something like that to happen? Because your point, the priority thing, it's like, yeah, we're going to overpay, this department, or, I know in Texas we get shit on a lot, but like our stadiums and high school and football stadiums are freaking massive. There's millions of, and they're beautiful. Don't get me wrong. I would love to play in Allen High School right now. That stadium's gorgeous. But I would hope that Allen's got enough capital to fund their security and safety posture, because they've got an open campus too, and I'm sure they've got issues with kids nowadays. But when Chief Francis told me that, literally 2021, maybe it's probably been 4 years now, I think that episode came out. I'm like, you're right. It's still today. It's like we have to wait until something happens before we fund something.
I'm seeing it. I guess a little more, a little better now. But to his point, and it still exists. We would operate, and of course, Arkansas didn't have dedicated funding for school safety and security, right? So some states, Texas does, some few other states has a dedicated line item for safety and security. Arkansas does not. And so we were pinching and pulling and robbing Peter to pay Paul, but we found a way to get it done, right? And you got to get creative sometimes. And sometimes there's some grants out there. But so we would see that roller coaster. And so something would happen. You're right. And then for 6 months after that happened, it was all about school safety and security. And in month seven, it was, what are you talking about? I don't know what safety and security is. What are you talking about? What school shooting? Can you explain that to me? And then it would be the same thing, right? So every time there would be, so being the largest school district at that time in Arkansas and right in the metro area. So anytime a school shooting would happen, the very next day or that day, I'd spend most of my time doing media interviews, right? Because that's all the media wanted to do was talk about what occurred, and there was so much, oh my gosh, school safety, we got to do something about school safety, and they talk about it for a few months. We talk about it 365 days a year. It's not just when something happens; it's trying to prevent that something from happening, right? It's trying to get ahead of that, and so we're starting to see it a little better now. The problem, what we're seeing now, Taylor, is grants. They're not yearly funding safety and security, right? So I can go out and say, hey, I'm going to give you this money and you're going to use it to buy this camera system that integrates with your access control, that integrates with all these things, all the bells and whistles, right? And then you're going to pay for it. And then 2 years from now, how are you going to pay for those annual fees? Right. And how are you going to start paying for that annual fee on year three and year four? Right. And so that's it's so a lot of people in the school safety world are not remembering that that funding is because a lot of these folks are fairly new to this world, that that funding is not consistent. Right. It ebbs and flows with everything else. Right. So you have to, be careful with that. But what we've got to do, excuse me. But what we've got to do with our legislature and with our government is it has to be annual funding, right? It can't be just a grant. And they've got it. Don't let the states lie to you. They've got it. And I'll give you Arkansas for one. And they're trying to they're 2 years in a row with providing this funding for schools. And we'll see if they do it for year three. But like the state of Arkansas is talking about getting rid of their state sales income tax. Because of the money that they have built up, right? Let's put that towards some security stuff, right? We don't need to have schools in Arkansas that are still trying to change out locks. That needs to become mandatory and funding available for, right? So we've got to get to that annual funding, whether it's Texas or whether it's Florida. Florida's probably one of the best jobs we've got right now. With funding for school safety and security, right? So Texas is doing better than some, but once again, if you start looking at 100 million across the state, our state of Texas, that's not very much money per school, right?
Yeah,
When you
there's a
start
large
dividing
school
it
district
out,
there. Yeah.
yeah. So you just got to get to where you got to stop. You got to start putting money where your mouth is, and not saying that you want security, but making it happen. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think DeSantis has done a good job in the state of Florida to help school safety and security. Abbott's done a decent job here in Texas, but to your point, Texas is just so damn big with the amount of schools here, and plus the kids here are just insane amount of schools. And you look at Oklahoma, just completely under-resourced, dude.
Right.
In
Oh
Oklahoma,
yeah. And
it's
it's depending on where you go in the state, right? So you can
bad.
the eastern part of the state is a little better than the far west out there, right? So it's crazy over there. And it's so spread out, and the homeless population over there in Oklahoma is pretty high too as well. So I was actually up there the other day, and I was kind of shocked at that, and so it shows you what that economy is doing over there. So,
Well, I always tell people, Ron, if you go to Oklahoma, there's only really two things to do, my friend: play college football or gamble. So, they've got 100+ casinos in that state, so you can
yeah. So I was up in Tulsa, that's where I was. So, yeah.
Plenty of, I got good friends at the Hard Rock, man. Josh and John over
Yeah.
there, good dudes. We haven't talked about Baldwin. I do want to end on that. I want to talk about Baldwin and Shell. I know you guys build a lot of schools here in Dallas-Fort Worth. There's a GC called Poe Construction. They build a lot of schools here in Dallas-Fort Worth. Since Baldwin specializes in schools and higher ed, K through 12, walk me through kind of your day-to-day process being the director of security and ops at the company.
Well, it's twofold. It's one, it's about assisting those schools at the pre-construction level, what we would call pre-con, and getting them to have the right security pieces and working with that building envelope specialist and all of those folks and the architects, right? So, here's where the architect Love me some architects. But first thing an architect wants to do is put 10,000 panes of glass in a school, right? Which is not the best thing in the world, right? And so a lot of people think active aggressor. Well, you put a bunch of glass in a school, my mind goes to fights immediately, right? So it's not that somebody's going to shoot through it. It's that two kids are going to get into a fight and the glass, and they're going to hit the glass and it's going to break and cut them, right? So that's my worry. So it's working with those architects and understanding, right? Because I understand there's going to be glass. I understand that aesthetics, when you build a new school, it's a major deal, right? That community is getting a brand new school and you want it to look pretty. But there's ways of making it look pretty while keeping security in mind, right? And I think it's working with that group and working with the client as well, right? And so they're talking about, we're talking about locks. So we were fortunate enough to build six campuses while I was on staff at Little Rock School District. And all six of those campuses have access control locks on every classroom door.
Love it.
Right. So
Love it.
it's they stay locked. There's no way you have to swipe the card to unlock it. And then you have systems where you can put it into almost like the old color system with the Homeland Security, right? So you can make it to where a teacher's badge doesn't work. If you need to shut it down all the way down to where security is the only badge that works for those doors, right? So it's super easy to do that. It's costly, but you got to build that in. Right. And you build that in and you get away from the keys. Right. So now we don't have keys. If you lose your key, my gosh, it's a major ordeal. Right. If you lose your badge, it takes me 10 seconds to turn it off and issue another one. Right. So it becomes more secure. That's probably one of the best things we did. It was great for my world. So that's it's ex explaining to them about that. Right. It's helping them with camera placement because they want to just throw cameras up. They don't understand a cross shoot. They don't understand, various other things in camera. I'm a big cross shoot guy, right? So if you got a camera looking at a camera, you never got a blind spot. Very rarely, right? So they don't understand a lot of that. They don't understand why a school district needs flock cameras, right? So why that's a city thing. Why would you do that, right? So we can explain to them, well, you can use them at your entrances and exits, and it helps more secure your school in connecting with the law enforcement and various other things, right? So it's about explaining all those things to them. And like if they're going to do weapons detection systems, well, do you have an outlet in the floor at your entranceway, right? A hidden outlet that you can use for that weapons detection system. It's about building in fencing. It's about building in, when they come and go, well, we want to go outside to do this and we want to go outside to do that. And you remind them when you open campus, when you start building an open campus, the problems it begins creating, right? And so we can make this fancy, nice atrium, but we can enclose it and make it connect, right? And make it pretty, but make it functional. So that's the first piece. And then the second piece is helping them with, so we don't rep a product, right? So I don't rep XYZ camera, I don't rep ABC camera. My goal is to help them get the right one. Right. So whichever one it is. And, it's just more of a consultant type piece, to answer questions. And, when grants come out, that the state departments come out, then schools or, superintendents are confused. They don't know what they need to do. They've got every vendor in the world beating their door down, telling them that their product is the best in the world. And they don't always know which way to turn. And so they can make those calls and we can say, hey, yeah, you know, that's a great product, but do you have this in place? Do you have that in place? Do you know, this is where your priority needs to lie, and helping them get that shaped. And sometimes it's just, I had one call the other day and they don't have a crisis plan. And I was able to send them crisis plans that I've written and say, hey, don't reinvent the wheel, take this and make it your own. Sometimes it's just helping them, and sometimes it's not always about the invoice I'm going to send them because, that phone call, I'm not going to send them an invoice for that phone call. I'm going to send them an invoice for that plan, right? It's about building a relationship and being there for them, and helping the schools for, with the basics. And so it's kind of that twofold. And then of course it's a lot of BD, business development type stuff and going and meeting with folks and talking to people. So.
Well, I think one of the things, Ron, I love that. Number one, like why throw in cutting edge technology when you don't even have the basics? That doesn't make
Right.
sense. But one of the things I think the industry, the security industry, could do better is like, because I've done this at, like, I work for, obviously, at Flock full time, but I've gone to do presentations for Flock, and I've done the same thing with other companies I used to represent. And I would ask them questions like this, like probing questions like, hey, what's your security posture? What challenges are you seeing? What do you have currently in place? And if they said, oh, we don't have locks, or we don't have the basic camera functionality to run your software, and I'm like, look, I'm not trying to sell you right now. I don't need to sell you right now. I'm going to walk away until you prioritize, the right infrastructure to be able to adapt something like this, because you can put cutting edge technology in place, but doesn't mean it's going to work to as advertised when you don't even have the basics in place already, So that's one of the things I want the industry to do better at, because again, to your point, when there's vendors or manufacturers that these sales reps are just trying to throw, darts down your throat and trying to get a deal done, it's like, well, you don't even know what the hell the customer's going through or the end user's going through, So that's
We
one
see
thing
it a
I want.
lot.
Yeah,
You know,
that's one.
we see it a lot. They got, it's just like this. I think I posted something the other day on the drones thing, and I don't know a lot about the drone program.
They're
I'm not,
cool, but do you need a drone?
I
Like,
forget.
are you set up for a drone?
That's my point, right? So do you have everything in place before, you get to that, right? So, we had Syntegix, the panic badge system, right? And then Syntegix knows that. I tell everybody it's not for everybody, right? Are you set up for that? Are you ready for that? Do you have everything in place before you need to get to that, right? If the answer is yes, okay, then go find you a company that does that. Sure, whatever. But if the answer is no, let's go back to the basics, right? And that's another thing, is everybody wants to harp on the active aggressor, right? Or active shooter. Active aggressor, active shooter. And don't get me wrong, we need to know about that, right? But that's not what a school security director worries about every day, right? They're trying to figure out fights. They're trying to figure out vaping. They're trying to figure out social media. They're trying to figure out all of the things that they deal with on a daily basis, right? So stop making it like that the active aggressor is the only thing a school security director or school district, period, thinks about, because it's not, right? And so if you got more people in the industry that were thinking like you and that backed out and said, hey, you know what, I don't really think this product is for you, you'll find that that'll help you in the long run,
Well,
right?
it's a humility thing. A lot of people don't have humility to walk away or recommend something else that they don't represent or get financial reward on. Like if I was to say, hey, Ron, go with this other LPR company because I know that my company's not good for you, there's a lot of people that do that. And so, and to your point, like the active aggressor, the active shooter problem, like, yeah, it's a problem, but it's not a daily problem. Like, you don't have active shooters at your school every single day. If it was, then yeah, you would need to put stuff in. But I think to your point, the social media problem, what I've seen, at least in my experience, is obviously you still have your common problems with fights that break out and someone brings a weapon to school. Sure, that happens. But it's cyberbullying and it's kids trying to hack things now. The systems, like, they want to be black hats. They want to take over systems, because if they can take over a system, then they get attention, it's fun, they can manipulate things. But that is the challenge right now. Digital footprints of kids trying to be hackers at schools.
We got to train them to be white hat hackers, be the good guys.
Cyber patriots, man, that's what we need.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, Ron, I've taken up too much of your time, brother, but I do want to end this episode with just, how can more people get involved with yourself? I last thing I want is to flood you with vendors, but I do want people to learn from you. So this episode will be going out live and being published, but what's the best way to contact you? Words of advice, words of recommendation? How do you want to close this out?
Dude, LinkedIn is probably the best way to get a hold of me. I'm all over LinkedIn. So that's probably one of the things that I didn't really get heavily involved with until probably about 7, 8 years ago. And I should have been doing it a long time before that. If you're not on LinkedIn, you're not active, man. There's a lot of things you can learn, a lot of people you can connect with on there. So you can jump on LinkedIn and hit me up there. It's probably the best way. I would just say this, with when it comes to security, is just use some common sense. That's probably the best thing there is. And if you don't know, reach out to somebody who does. There are tons of us out there that are willing to say, "Hey, that's stupid. What are you looking at that product for? Don't do that." But you also need to be understand that when you reach out to someone that's got any kind of depth of experience, you need to be ready for, like Taylor likes to call it, the truth, right? So, because we're probably not gonna sugarcoat it, right? Because this is not something that you really need to be sugarcoating. So, just use a little bit of common sense and get the basics done and involve your staff and stop trying to go for the pretty flashy things and because a lot of times the ugly stuff is what really stops the, is really what changes school security and changes your culture, right? So, and don't be scared to ask. I think that's the biggest thing. So.
Amen, man. I mean, transparency is uncomfortable at sometimes, but it's needed. It's necessary. And so you need to be.
Well, and it, you run into a lot of that. A lot of times, that with the reality with Taylor's with schools, a lot of schools don't want to hear the truth, right? They want to keep that head stuck in the sand like an ostrich, right? And they, the parents want to believe that their school is the safest thing in the world, right? And it's probably not, So, when's the last time you had a full assessment done on that campus? And that's a big thing too. And we do that as well. So if you And I get having an in-house person do the assessment, but they miss so
Oh,
much
yeah,
when
dude.
an in-house person does it, right? If I walk into your building and never been in your building, don't spend every day in your building, I will find things that you walk by every day. So find somebody that's qualified and not somebody that's thinks they're qualified, but that's actually qualified to come in there and look at your building and do a full assessment on it. You'll learn a lot.
I agree because the superintendent thinks that nothing. We don't have issues here, and they don't want to report those issues because then it affects their ratings with enrollment and having kids there, right? So it's like, oh, this school's not safe. We're not going to have kids come spend money here, whether it's private or public. They have that misconception in mind. But you're right, man. Having a third party come in and see things without the common eye that other people are so used to seeing throughout a school district is necessary. So, Ron, my friend, thank you, man. Enjoy the
Yeah, man.
conversation today. I appreciate you spending some time with me and sharing nothing but the truth.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, man.
Right, guys and girls. Well, that was Ron Self of Baldwin Shell and Construction Company. If you're not connected with him yet on LinkedIn, reach out to him, connect with him. This episode will be live on YouTube as well as our other streaming platforms, so Spotify, Pandora, Apple, iHeartMusic, Amazon, the list goes on. You guys stay safe out there. We'll catch you guys on the next one.